Hey folks, welcome to Bites of Insight. My name is Vinny Secor, Vice President of Business Development with Arete, and I'm joined by my fantastic partner, Yevgeny Urchup, who's the head of our security research here at Arete. On today's podcast, we are going to focus on law enforcement activities, specifically against cyber criminals, evolution of their methods, and the benefits of collaboration with cybersecurity companies. The main emphasis will be law enforcement and the things we're seeing. Just want to highlight that some of the content that we're going to talk about is found in our H1 crime report. We have an entire section on the law enforcement. And one of the reasons why I asked Yevgeny to focus on this topic, actually, it was Yevgeny's idea to focus on this topic, is because he co-authored most of that content in the report. So we're getting the deep dive on what we've seen in the law enforcement world going on recently. So Yevgeny, let's start with just a real simple question. You know, I've had a lot of opportunity to hang out with you and hear some of your stories, but maybe you could just take a couple minutes and introduce to everybody your background, because you do have a law enforcement background. So maybe I'll give you two questions to answer to kind of open. One, how did you get into cyber? And two, what's your experience working with law enforcement, military, things like that, just so everyone understands your background, your history?
Pretty much my whole career, I was in IT. So I grew up in a family of computer scientists. So I grew up around mainframes, played with punch cards when I was a kid, and stayed kind of on this track, working as application development, later on like IT project management. But specifically, when it comes to cybersecurity, it was fairly accidental for me. So during my last deployment with Army Reserves, I was deployed and worked as an enterprise engineer. We actually were co-located with a cyber threat intelligence team from another unit. And every once in a while, like when they were doing their daily briefings to our commanding generals, like I would, if I have time, I would stop by and just listen to what they cover. And I got absolutely hooked on the cyber threat intelligence analysis and fusion because for me, it was extremely fascinating to see how they combine information from different type of sources to tell the story and be able to track different activities. And after I got back from that deployment, I essentially reached out to my friends over there and asked, hey, like, do you guys have a position by any chance? And joined their unit. That's where my kind of, I guess, like cyber threat intelligence career started because even though we were doing it part-time, we had a very cool real-life mission of one of the agencies that we supported. They had very limited staff. So our team would come in 1 week in a month, but we actually would work on real life information. So we were helping them out with doing analysis, pulling the information together on various groups, etc. Eventually, just career progressed and from cybersecurity went into law enforcement. I spent a few years working on the joint task force, chasing cyber criminals for a living.
You know, you threw out a term I hear all the time here at Arete, we mention it. You actually said two things that I picked up on. One was you mentioned cyber threat intelligence. And so it might be helpful for our audience if you kind of define what that is. But then also you mentioned fusion. And I know that fusion centers are popular, but a lot of people know the acronym, know the term, but they might not actually know what it is. So if you wouldn't mind describing what you mean by fusion.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a fancy word for, I would say, analysis. So like you pull information and like when you work on the federal side, obviously you have access to more different sources. Some of them are classified. At the end of the day, you just pull information, whatever group or team you are researching from different sources, and you combine all the information together, essentially fuse it together. and that's where the term fusion comes from.
Okay. It kind of reminds me of like coordinating care with the healthcare system, as you have a lot of different pieces of data and you're trying to, you know, put it all together. So, you know, based on your prior experience as a special agent, could you walk us through like the typical process of a cybercrime investigation? You mentioned that you would get to work on real live cases. And then I know beyond that, you worked in law as a special agent. So if you could explain to us, like, what does that mean when you folks say, hey, we're working on an investigation?
Well, it's definitely not even close to what you see typically on TV, like on different TV shows. So like where like somebody asks, like, hey, John, pull me the information on this group. Then all of a sudden on the big screen, you have like the full profile popped up with the blipper coming out. Okay, he's moving that. It definitely doesn't work that way. We kind of talk a little bit about a lot of data analysis. And I guess the best comparison that I can probably make is that initially, you're looking for a good lead or a good break. So, and it's almost like you're dealing with a spider web of rabbit holes. And you keep going through like one by one until you actually find something useful that you can, like from evidence perspective, preserve and use it as an initial pivot point to start getting and collecting more information that later on you can present in court and defend like specifically how exactly you got that information. But it's extremely tedious work. And we hear about the special agents all the time, but like a lot of groundwork is actually being done by intelligent analysts that support those type of investigations, where they collect and do a lot of analysis on that type of data.
You know, we're at a very focused area, which is, you know, cybercrimes. And cybercrime, I mean, we like to say cybercrime has no borders, right? Given that with cybercrime, there's no borders, how do different agencies globally coordinate with one another? We're going to talk about, you know, Operation Endgame in a minute, but I'm curious, like, what have you seen? Like, how was it 10 years ago? How is it now? Like, how has it changed? Like how do different nation states collaborate with one another with respect to law enforcement agencies?
Things definitely improved significantly over the course of the last few years because just as an example, so like if you would be working on an investigation where a server is located in some European country, back then, like in order for you to preserve information on that server and eventually get that information from that server, like first of all, you would have to convince your USA attorney that yes, like this is why we need it, this is where it's located, like do you approve, do you not approve? So like once that approval is there, then the request goes to U.S. Department of Justice. Then Department of Justice passes it to Department of State. Then Department of State passes it to embassy of that country in United States. Then it flows all the way to the other country and the same trickle down effect. So it would go to Department of State on that country, Department of Justice. And eventually, like it gets down to a law enforcement agency that potentially can preserve the data and collect it for you. But the whole process could easily take weeks. As we see on a lot of different incident response cases, it's quite possible that by the time the request will get there, the information will be overwritten or destroyed or no longer available. That's definitely completely changed because now we have joint task forces, both in the United States and in Europe and Asia as well, where representatives, liaison officers from different international law enforcement agencies basically co-located. So if you need to get something done fairly quickly, at minimum, they can help you to preserve the data and you still follow the all like legal requirements and steps to get the information. But at least it significantly improves the efficiency on those operations. And as you said, nowadays, cybercrime is definitely a global problem. And the only way to fight against by having collaboration between international law enforcement agencies.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. One of the things I always would have students do when I was at Messiah, you know, teaching cybersecurity is I'd have them look up the FBI's most wanted cyber criminals, right? There's a most wanted list. And none of them are U.S. nationals. And it just kind of highlights that, you know, here we are, like, you know, most of the folks that the FBI have on their top list are probably living in another country and they're perpetrating crime from another country. So it, without a doubt, you know, seeing those advancements have probably helped quite a bit, which, you know, let's transition into talking about Operation Endgame. It's kind of a great example of how over the past 5 to 10 years, maybe even 15 years, law enforcement actions have really changed. Compared to where you mentioned it might take 3 weeks to where it is now. Can you tell us a little bit about Operation Endgame, what happened, and describe it to us?
Yeah, as we covered in the report, we definitely see an increased pace of law enforcement operations against cyber criminal groups. So like over the course, even like last 12 months, we've seen Hive Takedown, and we've had RegnarLocker, Lockbit, Black Cat, and Operation Endgame. What's cool about the trend that we see is that on top of the increased pace, we also see significant improvement in the efficiencies on how those operations are conducted. Because in the past, like if it would be a takedown of a group, so typically like you would have like few individuals that operate a certain group identified, the arrest warrants and indictments would be sealed. So until law enforcement would have a chance to get them during the course of their foreign travel. At the same time, all the preparation work would be done to take down the infrastructure and it would get executed simultaneously. Now, I think we kind of like, based on what you've seen with Lockbit and Endgame specifically, we're kind of shifting into a model where it's being done in a much better way. So that in the military, there are a couple doctrines. One, it's called asymmetric warfare, and the second one is counterinsurgency warfare. And asymmetric warfare is essentially a doctrine of a set of tactics on how you fight against a much larger force. And counterinsurgency is essentially like when you fight against the heavily distributed, both geographically or groups all over the world. And if you flip it on the cyber criminal side, like we kind of deal with the same thing. Like we have a much larger population of the bad guys versus good guys, us. And at the same time, as we discussed, they're all over the world. They're heavily distributed and it's really hard to find them and locate them. So like some of the techniques that are in those doctrines is that you kind of like trying to change public message. You're trying to influence both opinions. Like you're trying to leverage psychological impact on what you are doing during the course of the fight against the cyber criminal side. And that's what we see in law enforcement operations. So specifically like with Logbit, UK National Crime Agency, I think it was the first one where NCA leveraged the same style and format of their shaming site, data leak site, but it flipped it and started to use that with publication of all the information on all the decryption tools that are available for victims, information on the suspected manager of that group, $10 million reward that's been put if somebody can provide information on that group. And Operation Endgame is kind of like evolution on top of that. If you haven't watched it, I would highly recommend to go to endgame.com and check it out because they even published the cartoons. So like when they would prepare like for a new operation, there would be like countdown clock. They build the anticipation and then everybody waiting, okay, like what's going to happen next? And then like countdown clock goes out and they execute the new operation. And it keeps going and going and going. And the main message that the fight against cyber criminals will never stop. And it's only a matter of time before you get caught. And you probably should consider stop doing that.
Yeah, the cartoon is actually really fun. Even the website, right? And I think we have the link to the website in the crime report. We'll probably put it in the show notes as well. And so I just thought it was hilarious. You know, it's the whole countdown clock thing was really fun. I mean, if you think about it, it's really interesting that this is like a global law enforcement action. They're using like psychological measures. I mean, even when you're talking about the victim sites, right? So there's all these shaming sites that a lot of these threat actors put out. I don't know if this is totally accurate, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But if I remember right, the law enforcement would take over these sites, but they would even put information about the threat actor, right? Like whoever the leader was and all kinds of things. And so it's kind of like giving them a little bit of their own medicine. But I wanted to ask you to clarify something. So you use the term takedown, which, you know, you obviously know what that is. But for the general audience, when you talk about law enforcement takedown in the context of cybercrime, I mean, when we hear that, we imagine, you know, a law enforcement officer chasing somebody down, taking them down, cuffing them, reading their rights. It's probably a little bit different in the cyber world. So can you talk a little bit about what a takedown of a threat actor group's like?
No, in a sense, it's a little bit of both. And I also would highly recommend to read the book Tracers in the Dark. It's absolutely fantastic. And it actually covers some of the operations that I worked on in the past. It's a little bit of both because your goal is to create as much impact as possible, both with arrests. So sometimes you potentially may need to chase somebody down the street somewhere in a European country. But at the same time, they're trying to also get access to infrastructure that belongs to the bad guy. So it may involve getting images or in some cases, hardware that belongs to cyber criminal groups, kind of like in investigative life cycle, it can provide additional leads and provide more information on who else is involved in those cyber criminal activities and may help to expand the future steps of the investigations.
And so you mentioned the book Tracers in the Dark. That's by Andy Greenberg, right? And he wrote the book Sandworm. I had that as one of my textbooks with one of the classes that I taught. So yeah, Tracers in the Dark, fantastic book by Andy Greenberg. We highly recommend it. Sandworm is a little bit older in age, but it's fascinating because it talks a lot about how I think Russia used Ukraine as a testbed for some of their development of their cyber tools. And, you know, it led to eventually what we're dealing with now. Let's kind of shift a little bit. Talk to us, you know, in the context of takedown, describe to us what like the takedown of like Logbit looked like, because there's been a lot of confusion about it. And then any information you might have on Alpha V Black Cat, those are two threat actor groups that were traditionally ranked number one and number two in our statistics year over year in terms of leading threat actor group in terms of number of incidents. So maybe talk to us a little bit about what happens there and as a cause and effect with the, you know, with Operation Endgame and stuff.
Based on what's publicly known about both operations, and I'm referring to Black Hat Alpha V and Lockbit, it appears that the law enforcement actually were able to compromise the cyber criminal infrastructure and were able to stay on their servers at least for several months. I think with Lockbit, the FBI mentioned that they were able to stay on their servers for 7 months and quietly were passing free decryption tools to victims that they could identify through the information. And it's like one of the, like those both are very good showcases on how the efficiency of those law enforcement operations we see on developments on the efficiency of those law enforcement operations. Instead of just, okay, like let's take the server offline, like on the back end, they were actually collecting more and more information and insights on the cyber criminal group, helping victims on the back end, and both were extremely successful operations that we observed. Specifically with Lockbit, I think there were a little bit kind of a tug of war happening between law enforcement and Lockbit, because initially it appears that law enforcement were able to successfully obtain access and hijack the cyber criminals' website. But it looks at least like on a couple occasions that the bad guys were able to take it over back. But I think we're beyond that point.
I'm just thinking about that comment you made about how the law enforcement was just sitting on the servers. And I know what that means in our world. I mean, that's a lot of victims and clients that were helped out along the way, which is stunning. You know, let's kind of cover one more thing and then we'll call it a day, so to speak. So how can cybersecurity companies support law enforcement? You know, like we love working with law enforcement. We love the mission of trying to stop cybercrime. You know, what are some of the ways that cybersecurity companies and law enforcement agencies can work together?
A very good question, because and then like going back to the concept of asymmetric warfare against the cyber crime, law enforcement cannot do it by themselves. So especially during the initial phase of doing analysis and trying to find leads, it's almost impossible to do it effectively without incident response companies, cybersecurity companies like ours. Because day in, day out, we deal with victims of fairly sophisticated ransomware groups, and we collect a lot of information on operations of those groups. To be successful in fight against cyber crime, it's almost impossible to do it without that public-private partnership, because we essentially assist, we are force multipliers for law enforcement. I think that, like as we talked about, the international collaboration, and it's essential to continue to develop those public-private partnerships to be successful in the future.
You know, we've been talking a lot about this, you and I, in terms of just how encouraged we are. And I mean, you were like giddy. I remember, like we were grabbing dinner somewhere, just talking about all the activity and how great it's been to see some of these threat actors taken down. I mean, for us who are in it every day, we see how active the threat actor community is, and it's nice to see, you know, some of them no longer on the board, so to speak. You know, want to give a quick shout out. Yevgeny and I sit on NetDiligence's ransomware advisory board. And it's a fantastic, I mean, we're talking about like, how can we help law enforcement? It's just a fantastic group they set up. There's probably about 30 to 40 cybersecurity companies that are part of it. All of our friends, so to speak, that, you know, we get together about once a quarter. We get into it. We talk about what we're seeing. We get into, you know, details. We talk about, you know, different statistics that each of us are seeing. And a lot of times we will either provide a briefing to members of law enforcement, or they'll join us and they'll provide us a briefing. And I've always thought that was great. That was one of the experiences I had recently where I thought, wow, we have really grown in the area of public-private partnership, specific to cybercrime. I remember, you know, 8-10 years ago when it just seemed like our worlds never crossed. And now it almost seems like, I know Yevgeny, you could pick up the phone and call, you know, people and they'll answer right away because they, you know, you've been working with them on things. And so it's a really encouraging time. Check out that Operation Endgame website. I think it's really great. Yevgeny, I think you mentioned a little bit that, you know, number one or number two have kind of flipped as a result of these Operation Endgames. I think number one in terms of most activity, like our most active threat actor, is Akira. And they used to be, I think, third or fourth on the list. And they've moved up, you know, primarily because Lockbit and some of the other TAs have been taken down. But we have a blog we're going to be releasing soon. So keep an eye out for that. We'll put the link in the show notes for everybody to see. As always, Yevgeny, it's always fun to do a podcast with you. Love that we get to do this together and love that you picked this topic. This was a lot of fun. And folks, Yevgeny and I could probably talk about this for hours, and Yevgeny could definitely talk about it for hours. And so if you ever are with him sometime, ask him a question about law enforcement, and he can tell you everything. Again, thanks for joining, you know, this podcast. If you have any questions, please contact marketing by email. The email address is marketing@ariteir.com. Be on the lookout for the blog that's coming out on Akira. And if you haven't had a chance to look at our crime report, we'll put a link to in the show notes for you and check it out. I think it's like page 14 or 15 in the crime report where we talk about law enforcement and specifically Operation Endgame. Cheers, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.